If it feels like no one understands your problems or cares to listen, if it feels like there is no one else in this world who has gone through what you have, if you feel like you're so close to giving up on your goals, your business, your ideal life, but still holding on, Cafe with Monica was made for you. I'll show you how to deal with the everyday and not so everyday situations that surface in the lives of millennials. By sharing my experiences and knowledge, I hope to inform, inspire, and provide solutions to problems that may seem out of reach. So grab your coffee or drink of choice and let's just talk about it. Welcome to Cafe with Monica. I am Monica, your host, a millennial counselor helping millennials to hashtag just talk about it over coffee. In this episode, we're going to talk about some deep personal development when it comes to going through a divorce, finding yourself, and then turning pain into purpose. So grab your coffee or drink of choice and let's just talk about it. Hey guys, welcome back to the podcast. I am so excited because I have Susie Robb, who is a mom, interior designer, owner, and lead designer of shopfromsusie.com, an online based home decor store, founder of the 626 Foundation, and author. When you reached out to me over email, you were speaking my language. I think you said, I have a passion for turning pain into purpose. And I think, oh my gosh, because I get so many requests to have people on the podcast, but they've never actually listened to the episodes. And then you talked about Jillian's episode, imposter syndrome, which I can relate. I'm sure you can relate as a woman in business. Yeah. So I was so excited when you wanted to come in and I'm like, yes, I need to bring her in and talk about her story.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm excited.
Thank you so much. Okay. So I want you to tell me a little bit about your journey from, you know, you pick whatever part of your life you want to share, but tell me a little bit about your journey in becoming a business owner, all of that.
Okay. Well, I was a stay-at-home mom about 30 years old, and I went through a very difficult situation in my marriage. My husband had fallen in love with another woman. I'm pretty vocal about that. Mm-hmm. And I stayed for a year knowing about the relationship and just trying to make it work. And then when I realized it just wasn't going to happen, I knew I had to start becoming more independent. I had to go back to work. But I don't think I realized at the time, like, this was a chance to do all the things I wanted to do. But I did have this like desire to kind of carve out a place for just me. And so I wanted to own my own business. I thought that would be like, and it felt like a pipe dream, but I was like, that would be so wonderful if I could have this piece of the American dream that's just for me. And so I had no business experience. As you know, I wasn't an entrepreneur. I went to school. I was a ballet dancer. I had some random, you know, admin jobs, but no retail experience. I had a heart for decorating and I'd always been a decorator, but didn't go to school for that. Mm-hmm. So I guess I just took the first step, which was to find someone that had a store that needed some help. And so that's what I did. I found and I'd like to think it was divinely appointed, just happened to meet someone who was looking for help and started working for her for like 8 hours a week. And then, filed for divorce. The divorce was final. Started working more hours, started hiring a sitter, daycare, and then it all kind of rolled from there. And then 2 years later, the owner had asked, she said she wanted to step out and would I be interested in buying the shop? Mm-hmm. And that was the opportunity.
Wow, that's amazing. So definitely turning pain into purpose. I love that. So from the time that you filed divorce and the time that you were starting to realize, okay, I can potentially start a business out of this. So was it 2 years? Was it a span of 2 years or was that longer?
No, it might have been a little bit shorter than that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
And so during that time when you did file for divorce, how did it affect you personally? Because I see that you had determination and you wanted to, like you said, make a space for yourself. But did you feel like that was a way to cope? Or did you feel like you know, a way to cope and not and ignore emotions? Or were you like, you had these emotions, but you knew like, okay, I need to do something for myself?
Absolutely. So I think the relationship had become so toxic and so volatile, and it felt like a cancer. And I know that my dreams for this business ownership were escapism. It was a way for me to escape my reality and dream and fantasize about a life that looked different than mine. And it doesn't mean that I wasn't doing the healing work. And the work, but it was like something I set my sights on, and I didn't even know this was happening at the time, but it became this great desire and something that took shape. And it was like I was seeing it in my mind's eye without knowing that that's what I was doing, and it manifested.
That's amazing.
It's crazy.
That is crazy, because like so many women who are wanting to, you know, fulfill their dreams, they see it, but it's so far out, and they just like, I don't know the steps, or how am I going to after this? Because I feel like this is a life altering situation. Like, you know, you all got married, and I'm sure this wasn't something that you imagined was going to happen.
Right.
The infidelity. How did that, during those moments before you decided to separate, you decided to file for divorce, what was it like, maybe that last year together?
Awful. I mean, it really was. We had tried, it's safe to say I tried to get us in counseling. We tried multiple counselors. It was just, I was talking about this with a friend the other night. I think I said at one point, at least I know I tried everything, and kind of that idea of like, I have to do everything I can to make this work. Mm-hmm. But now looking back, and I know hindsight's 20/20, so I have to give myself grace. I actually didn't need that. I didn't need to tell myself I tried to everything possible, because I think the more self-worth that we have, I could have said day one when this was found out to be like, I don't want to be in this anymore if that's what this relationship is. Yeah. Does that make sense?
No, that totally makes sense. I mean, when your identity is with, you know, is enmeshed with your partner's identity and being a mom and having this, you know, family. And I don't know if this was something instilled growing up about like, you just stick it through. Like, you got to get this together.
Right.
Like, you know, work it out. Go to counseling. Like, there's always, you can always work it out. I don't know if that's what made you believe that, hey,
for
let's work it out.
Yeah, I think it did. I think the religious upbringing, I think the pride, denial, rejection, all these pieces that say, you know, you've got something that you feel like you're losing and you hold tighter because your identity is wrapped up in it. And you think, well, who am I without this? And you're afraid to let it go. But I think in that gripping, I'm responsible for a lot of the just destroying, if that makes sense, you know, instead of this, like, this peaceful, you know, this isn't working. This is not for us. Mm-hmm. And letting it end more gracefully sooner, but that just didn't happen.
But also you had children involved. So I think a lot of that also, making a decision to just quit things, I mean, that's hard.
Yeah, definitely.
You know,
and they were so little. I mean, they would have been, I think my daughter was like 18 months, so, and my son was 3.
And at that time, how long had you been out of the workforce?
About 3 or 4 years.
So were you fearful about what's going to happen after, you know, the divorce, and what am I going to do?
Yes and no. Sometimes I can have this like, I can be so optimistic. I'm a 7 on the Enneagram, so I'm the eternal optimist. So a lot of time that works in my favor in that I can be bold. I'm not that fearful. Everything's a new adventure.
Uh-huh.
You know, so it was more exciting than it was scary. And I've said before, most of my fears were not about how am I going to do this by myself. They were about identity crisis things, like, you know, the religious piece. Being raised in a world that says divorce is not an option, like, that those were the things that were hard to deal with, not so much the fear of the unknown.
Mm-hmm. And when you were going through this, when you were in this relationship, in this marriage, what would your family tell you? I mean, what were some things that you heard that maybe you look back and you're like, man, I should have listened to that. Or, ugh, no, they told me to keep going. Like, so what are some things? I know family, they're there, you know, they want to see the best in you and have in you having the best life. But sometimes they might not always say the right things, and it's okay. You know, everyone's human.
Yeah. I had some family members that were on an emotional roller coaster like I was. So they would have moments where they were like, you need to get out. You deserve better. And then they would have moments where they were like, you should really stay and stick it through. We were all like back and forth. My sister, who's a executive pastor here in Dallas, and she was a chaplain for many years. She really is. She's not my therapist, but she's my second therapist.
Yeah, we all have that.
She was actually the one that from very early on, and she never wavered, said, you are becoming addicted to this toxicity. And I see this becoming your life if you don't make a change. And she said, I'm here for you and I will keep listening. But at some point, Susie, you have got to make a decision.
Wow. Those are some powerful words.
She's incredible. And it was hard to hear, you know, because I thought, no, this is not becoming who I am. But, you know, I think pain can absolutely infiltrate your life and manifest in so many different ways. It was affecting the way I mothered. It was affecting everything, like a cancer, really. And for her to say, you're addicted to this toxicity and
That's
you need
crazy.
To get out.
Yeah. And you mentioned pride. So there was pride in like,
oh, yeah.
You're like, oh no, like I'm not. And the thing is, it's like when you're in that situation, you can't see anything. It's like you got blinders, you know?
For sure. And not wanting, you know, none of my friends were divorced, God no. And so it was like, well, we're not going to be the first, you know, we were 33. And so it was, if I'm being totally honest, there was some pride there of not wanting to accept that our marriage would end, and the comparison of, well, what does that mean if ours fails? And, you know,
yeah.
So
oh, yeah,
there was a lot of learning and a lot of growth and self-reflection and, yeah.
And I think it's like people then like, what do you mean? Like a lot of learning. It's like when you're in that situation, you learn all these behaviors, you're in a routine. You don't, you know, you learn how to react to certain things, to let some things, you know, just, you know, pass. And you don't realize it until it hits you when you're like, oh my gosh, my husband is cheating on me. What do I do? What did I do? You know, like, did you ever have those feelings? Like, what did I do?
Oh, absolutely. I felt like I personalized it way too much. I mentioned that we attempted to see some counselors and he went for a few times and then he kind of dropped off. Well, I kept going because I just was convinced that if I could fix me, I could fix us.
Yeah.
So I bought all the books. This is going to make me emotional.
I have tissues.
I bought all the books and I read all of them, you know, how to pursue your husband, it's sad now to think about because I was just so convinced again that if I could be perfect, really, is that perfectionism mindset, that I could get him back. And listening to all the podcasts and the sermons and the, you know, having friends pray and fast. And I mean, it felt like a battle that I was trying to win. And I remember getting to a place of, what am I fighting for again? You know, you lose sight of what it is that you really want. And then when you're like, you're fighting for this man. Well, I don't think I want this man. Not like this. Not anymore.
Yeah. Not you conditional.
Exactly.
Yeah. Conditional love. I think,
yes.
I think we forget about unconditional love and seek these conditional loves where, he will love me if I do this, right? So reading all those books and trying to do all the tricks and all the, and being intimate and pursuing him intimately and having these conversations and being the, like you said, the perfect wife so that you can have him back when it's like, wait, I didn't do anything.
Right.
Like I'm doing
everything
that I could.
I think I lost all self-respect in the process. I totally abandoned me. And I think ironically it makes us unattractive because he, at one point he had said, And not that that's the goal.
Yeah.
But he had, you know, he had said all that I was doing was suffocating him. And I think, well, you're just so selfish that you could say that. But then I think maybe it was, you know, maybe my, like, I'm trying everything and, you know, and he thought, I don't know how to receive this. Like, you just do you and let us, and let me do me, and maybe mm-hmm. it will work. But I think I lost my identity in the pursuit mm-hmm. of him, and it repelled him. It didn't draw him in.
Yeah.
And that, and I'm okay with that. Yeah. I'm not saying I did it wrong. I just think, you know, back to if I had had the grace to just walk away from the beginning and say, I'm not okay with that, with you stepping out. I feel disrespected and I'm worth more than this. And yeah. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but it takes time to get to that point. Like in the moment, you're wanting to do everything in your power so that, like you mentioned, say at least I tried.
Right.
You know, so it's also a part of us making sure that I at least did what I had to do, whether uh-huh. it worked or not, whether uh-huh. or not it was productive. It feels right when you're doing something, when yeah. you're not just stuck in the situation and just accept the situation for what it is.
Right.
You want to fix things. You know, women, we love to fix right. things.
Totally.
When they're unfixable
and
sometimes.
But I think that mindset of I tried everything looks like work.
Yeah.
It looks like staying. It looks like, whereas stepping out and saying, okay, you don't necessarily have to file for divorce the day that he says, you yeah. know, or that you find out, but to say like, I'm going to take some space. That can also be you doing what it takes to make it work. Do you know what I'm saying? Drawing boundaries is also trying everything to make it work.
Mm-hmm.
So but again, I didn't have the self-worth. I didn't have the maturity. I didn't have any of those tools. I don't think I was an emotionally healthy young woman at the time. So I don't beat myself up about it. But like if that happened to me today, it would be a completely different scenario.
Yeah, I mean, that's all part of growth.
It is.
You know?
It is. And, you know, that's what we're all doing is growing up together. And he and I had met in high school. So we continued to grow up together. And it was like, here we are going yeah. through this together.
And at some point, you know, you guys are different people,
mm-hmm.
you know, yeah. and in relationships, you either grow together. You know, whether it's in the same path, you grow to each other, you support each other and you move forward in your relationship, or you grow and mm-hmm. it's different pathways. And that's okay. But I know that it's not okay what he did. Mm-hmm. How did you find out? Like,
I went through his phone.
Okay.
I had had a gut feeling for a very long time. And I think that, you know. You
yeah.
just, you know, you have that sense. And I think women especially can be incredibly intuitive and you need to listen to that. And it's not, and it's sad because then you have the gaslighting on the other end of mm-hmm. you're crazy. I don't know what you're talking about. And then you feel like, am I making all this up? But I think no, lean into it. If you think something's wrong, it probably is.
Yeah. And ask, you yeah. know, we're so afraid to ask. I mean, that was some, I mean, it wasn't a marriage, but it was a toxic relationship where I stayed for 3 years because I thought I could fix this person. And I thought that what I was receiving was what I thought I deserved, mm-hmm. you know, and that mm-hmm. I couldn't find anything better. And the thing is, with this relationship, I had left a previous toxic relationship. So I thought it was better mm-hmm. because there were some better aspects. But when you're in the moment and you don't and you use that person for self-validation and self-worth.
Yes.
And you have no self-love for yourself. And you're not dealing with your own stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Then you lose yourself in that person.
Mm-hmm. You had asked me a question in emails about mm-hmm. therapy. And I look at when we were seeing the therapist together. We were in the middle of trauma. You know, we were in the middle of
it is
some
trauma.
Stuff.
Yeah.
And there's no way we could have gotten to the issues that we each had individually apart from what was happening in our marriage by going to a counselor that,
yeah,
I'm losing the words. I feel like now when I see my therapist, I'm not in crisis. So we're able to talk about things from my childhood, from growing up, different experiences that have helped me to build self-worth, to learn boundaries, to be self-aware, become the best version of myself. Mm-hmm. To try to do that work in the middle of crisis is impossible.
Yeah.
And so I think that I'm a big advocate for people seeing therapists when nothing is wrong.
When nothing appears wrong, absolutely. Right? My husband said this funny thing because he was like, somebody had asked me, you're a therapist for entrepreneurs. Aren't entrepreneurs like, you know, badasses? They're in their business. So like, isn't it like therapy for winners? And I'm like, it is therapy for winners.
I love that.
You know, like my husband said that, like, it's therapy for winners. And I'm like, it helps to be in your A game because there are going to be things that trigger us from having a conversation with an asshole who may have said something about our business or made us feel small. It's okay to just talk about it. It might not faze you in the long run, but having that space to talk about stuff like that happened in our business.
Right.
Or that trigger us to come up.
Totally. It's just like any other part of your health journey. Preventative care almost, you know, and it's like getting a wellness check, you know, seeing a therapist. I think there's so much value in cognitive therapy and also all of the holistic therapies that are available.
Absolutely. And I feel like people need to be more proactive about going and checking their mental health and making sure that, because we sometimes get into this mindset, I'm fine, I'm okay.
Yeah.
And it's like, but are you? Like, right. Are you?
And I'm like, no, this is actually the best time to go.
Yeah.
You know, when life seems like
it's fine,
you know, calm, then you can really dive down into things that are under the surface. But if you try to go at the peak of a crisis, you've got so much that has yet to even been touched or discovered about yourself.
It's like a ladder. It's like you're climbing a ladder and you're wanting to be at the very top of the ladder when you don't even have the strength to get up.
Exactly.
You know, when you're in crisis.
Mm-hmm.
So the minute that you're able to just step back and be like, you know what, I can't climb that ladder. Right. And you start climbing it, right?
Yeah.
And you start being able to uncover the things that maybe happened in childhood. Right. That's why you're dealing with the situation a certain way. I absolutely agree. So I told you that I listened to the episode with Jen. I loved it. And you mentioned grief counseling.
Yes.
And I was like, oh, yeah. Like, you know, divorce is grief. Like, it
absolutely.
Is.
Absolutely.
You know, you're going through not necessarily a death, but, the ending of a stage in your life or a person in your life that's exiting your life. So how was that? Did you do group therapy or individual therapy?
Well, I like to say, I think sometimes divorce can be worse than death because every time you see that person, it's like another resurrection. Like, you buried him and then they're back and then you bury him and then they're back, you know, and it's this idea of this perpetual loss and never really, you know, and would never discount widowhood, but to bury a loved one, I think there's maybe more closure than a divorce where you constantly see them and you're constantly working together with your children and it, you might never get closure.
Yeah.
But so I started going to divorce care. So divorce care is group therapy.
Awesome.
And it's funny because I actually ended up doing it twice. The first time I went, I was very closed off. You know, it was like, I'm good.
Resistance.
Yeah. And thinking, you know, this is corny and cheesy. And, you know, but I made myself go. I think I made it a resolution. That might be why I stuck with it. I had a relationship, a very short one. And after that, I was like, okay, I'm going to try again. So
I need to still work on myself.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the second time I was very much more open to receiving the information. Mm-hmm. And I felt it was so beneficial that then I started teaching it. So I became a divorce care leader and I did that for 2 sessions. And I feel like I'm an empath anyway. And I loved meeting other women and men who were walking the same pain, the same journey, and it's grief share. 1000% it's grief share. And funny enough, my business kind of took this turn, and we've embraced that as well. So now I've been able to incorporate it as an entrepreneur.
That is amazing. I love it when we can blend our experiences together within our business, because then we're able to show up authentically, and it becomes, people are able to relate to our business, and they're and therefore be sellers of our mission, right? And our purpose, right? So like you said, turning that pain into purpose and making sure that for people who are going through this, you're there, you share the experience, you know what it's like. And they're able to, like I said, yeah, feel like they are a part of your journey, which is so great. When a business does that, you know, makes people feel like you're part of the journey and the growth when that business pivots or whatever. I love that. I did want to ask you, so in therapy, what are some coping skills that you may have learned on how to get through a divorce? I don't want to say get over. I feel like a lot of people say get over it.
Yeah.
Got to get through.
For sure. And you know, now that you say that, I remember Googling many nights, you know, how to get over fill in the blank. Yeah. How to get over him, how to get over the divorce, how to get over rejection, how to get over. And now that I think about it, that how to get over. And again, as an Enneagram 7, we like to avoid pain.
Yeah.
And so that really is like, tell me how to cut through this junk and get to the yes. Right? Like, I don't want to do the work. I don't want to go through it. But it absolutely is. You have to go through it. There's no shortcuts. There is no, well, there is, but if you take them, you're going to end up right back where you started.
Yeah, it's going to resurface. And that's the thing. If we don't go through the emotion. Mm-hmm. So many people come to therapy and they say, well, like growing up, I was never allowed to express my emotions and to fully go through it. So be sad and cry and just like even men, right? Like they're told, you know, you don't cry, men don't cry. So I was able to go through that emotion. So it comes up in relationships where I'm just so full of these emotions and I don't know where it's coming from and why I'm projecting what I'm feeling to my relationship or to my partner. And it's like, I tell them, did you ever go through it? Like, did you ever talk about it?
Right.
No.
Yeah.
That might be it, you know?
My sister is the one where I first heard this language, but she always says, hold space. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know what that meant until her, you know, but this idea of, when you're triggered, when something happens, to hold space. Mm-hmm. So what that looks like is don't react. Mm-hmm. So my advice, or I guess a coping skill, is learning that anytime I was triggered, so, you know, my ex gets the kids and I'm lonely, I feel triggered. Hold the space. Or he says something, or I find out he's telling people things that aren't true, mm-hmm. instead of this knee-jerk reaction, hold space. And I think that that is the most powerful thing we can do. Mm-hmm. And silence is golden on so many levels. It gives you time, which can help you decide what you're feeling, what you want to do. Mm-hmm. It gives you power to just take a step back. But I think in a highly volatile situation like a divorce or something where there's mm-hmm. all these emotions, you want justice, you want vengeance, you're angry. And these are all very powerful emotions that feel like they need action. Mm-hmm. So anger needs an action and vengeance needs an action, you know, and you're so in these triggers, it's like, well, what can I do so that I don't feel this way?
Yeah.
And holding space says, what can I do so I can fully feel this way?
Yeah.
And that changes everything.
Hello, my fellow millennial. This is Monica. I hope you're enjoying this episode. Quick break here. If you're new or have been an active listener to the podcast, I would love to work with you. I'm a licensed professional counselor in the state of Texas, and I have officially launched my private practice in Dallas, where I provide individual therapy both in person or online if you're in Texas. I work with female millennial entrepreneurs. I work with individuals who are struggling with anxiety, depression, self-esteem, and overall life transitions. I work with the Latinx population, and my sessions are available in Spanish. I know it's hard to just the thought of having somebody, an outsider, inside your life. But if you're feeling like you're not sure if therapy is a right fit for you, I offer a free 15-minute consultation so I can answer all your questions. It's okay to have fear. I've been there, and that's why I would love to help. I'll have a link for the 15-minute consultation on the show notes, or you can also find the link at my Instagram account at Cafe with Monica. So sign up for a free 15-minute consultation. All right, guys, thank you so much for listening, and let's get back to this episode. I love that. And I use that term a lot too with my clients, because a lot of people, it's hard to hold the space for themselves. And so when they come here, it's like, I'm holding space for you. Like, this is the moment and carved out for you to hold space and talk, and let's go through what happened. Let's go through the situation. And I'm curious, when you started, you know, holding space for yourself during those moments, was it uncomfortable?
Absolutely. And it still is. I still have a hard time with it. You know, I mean, every time I'm like, what am I going to do? Am I going to hold space? And sometimes I'm like, I don't want to effing hold space. Yeah. Like,
and it's okay to have that, right? Like, I don't freaking want to do this.
Yes.
Like, screw this. Fuck this. I want to just, like, feel this feelings and, like, you know.
Yeah.
He did this. He did that. Like, you know, and I'm, but holding space is making sure that you are able to walk through those emotions instead mm-hmm. of just reacting.
Mm-hmm.
Because I always tell my clients, the only thing we have control is our reactions, but we have no control over others' reactions or actions.
Yeah.
We hold that power. And, yeah. And if once you hone into that power, it's amazing.
And it's actually more powerful
yeah.
than trying to control somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
I think manipulation can feel powerful.
Oh,
can
yeah.
feel like, absolutely. If I do this, I'm going to make him feel this way. You know, that side of it can feel like, well, I know his buttons, so I'm going to push him, and that makes me feel powerful. But it doesn't, and it hurts you in the end, and you can't control how people feel and how they act and how they're going to react, like you said, how they would react to you. But to hold space for yourself and to give, and it's really for you, it's not for anybody else, mm-hmm. to hold that space, to fully feel what you're feeling is that power, because it's coming from within,
mm-hmm.
is just, to me, I have found 10 times more gratifying and fulfilling
yeah.
than trying to control the other person.
Oh yeah. I mean, I don't know how many times I can tell you, like, I've tried to control situations to go mm-hmm. in my favor in relationships, mm-hmm. Or hold things against that person when they did something bad. And mm-hmm. I call it, like, we're pulling the file. I do it with my husband all the time too. Like, let me pull the file. And okay, this is, remember that time where you did this? And I have to watch myself. And I'm like, look, we already forgave him for this. It does you no good to pull the file back on. Right. We all have that filing yeah. cabinet of things that our boyfriend mm-hmm. or our husband have done and that we hold them against to it, but it does not serve at yeah. all. It does not serve at
right.
all.
Right. And even in things that seem much more smaller, uh-huh. like on a much smaller scale. Yeah. So for example, I still have a hard time when my kids go to their dad's and I'm at home by myself. Yeah. It's lonely. And, you know, the knee jerk reaction is, let me get some takeout and a bottle of wine and watch my favorite movie. And that all sounds like
self-care
but for me that's not self-care mm-hmm. because I feel hungover the next day and I'm not my best self. The nutritional values in takeout are non-existent mm-hmm. so then I've got the emotional hangover as well, and it's just, that's not self-care.
Yeah.
And so the idea of holding space means when their dad drops them or picks them up, holding that space before I pick up the phone to dial the takeout, to say, you know what, I'm just going to give myself like 15 or 20 minutes, just take a break and decide what it is I really want right now in this moment.
Yeah, because you automatically want to get over the uncomfortableness,
exactly.
right?
Exactly.
Over it. So like, how do I get over it? I'm going to pour myself a wine because I got to do something. I do not want to sit in this thought. I really just want to push through.
Yes.
And we call it self-care. And I have to tell this to my clients when they ask me, like, what do you do for self-care? And I'm like, oh, I go get my nails done. okay, so what do you do during that time? Like, right. Do you journal? Are you just mindfully there? Like, right. Because it's not you going to get your nails done. That's the self-care. It's what do you do when you're there? Are you present in the moment? Are you being mindful about the moment? Mm-hmm. Or are you just thinking about everything that's going on, but now you got nice feet?
Exactly. It's tricky because I think, you know, we have taken on this treat yourself as self-care, which it can be if you're in the right mindset. But I think those that hold the space has become just a game changer. Mm-hmm. And then you just, it's sobering.
Yeah.
And then you think, okay, what is it that I really need? And maybe it's just that I need to cry because this sucks, you know, and maybe that it's need. I need to journal and get this out. Mm-hmm. Or I need to call my friends or something, you know, but that, again, I think women are more prone to it. I don't know that. Yeah. It just seems that way.
Yeah.
Of this idea, I have to do something. Do something.
Oh, yeah. I'm a doer. I'm a doer. Like, I need to do something. If I get an email that phases me that I'm just like, why did this person say that? I'm like, I'm going to do something. I'm going to reply with a really bad email back to them and no. Yeah. I could just choose to not reply because that's a boundary.
Right.
And I don't want to work to that. Or I could choose to write that email later.
Yeah.
When I'm okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure as a business owner, I want to transition out talking about business and how this has affected you in business because you've learned coping skills throughout this and you've learned how to maybe handle situations or people that may trigger or have similarities to your ex-husband. In business, how do you handle conflict or difficult situations?
I think I've seen some growth there as well. Mm-hmm. So like initially it was avoid conflict at all costs. That was how I avoided conflict. I just did, you know,
the sevens, man.
Right. Yeah. Like, I'll get you to like me a lot. Ooh,
yeah.
And then we will never have conflict and I will never have to deal with it, which I see that's how I was in my marriage. And that's how I was as a child.
Yeah.
So like it will, I think our, again, I know we're transitioning out of this, but the importance of therapy is because if you can be your best self in these situations, you're healing the inner child, you're healing the adolescent, you're healing and then you're giving yourself so much more room to succeed and be successful in every area, relationships, business, you name it, because you've learned to do the work and you've come out the other side.
Oh yeah.
So I would say initially that was how I avoided conflict, was be perfect, be likable, avoid conflict. And I think now it's the same trajectory of my self-worth. Mm-hmm. So the more self-worth I have, the more I believe in me, the more I believe in what it is I'm doing, then the stronger I have become to tell others, okay, this is the boundary and you can't cross it. Or I'm sorry you feel that way. I mean, let me give you some practical examples. Yeah. So like our return policy is pretty much non-existent. Unless something is damaged, we just don't accept returns. Mm-hmm. We have very unique products and they're expensive and we trust that we're giving you a really good product. And so we just don't accept returns unless it's damaged or broken.
Yeah.
But I would get emails like, I'm very disappointed with this product. And oh my God, well, let me give you all your money back. You know, immediately, like, because I want you to be happy.
I want you to like me.
I want you to, that's what it was.
Yeah.
I would say like, well, you know, the customer's always right and it's customer service. And it's like, that's bullshit. I just wanted them to like me.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt rejected on some level that they didn't like what I had sent them as part of our store. So the stronger I have become personally, the more I am able to say, I'm sorry you were disappointed with your product. Unfortunately, we don't accept returns because we really believe that we're providing great services. And, you know, I hope you'll give us another shot. But
yeah, staying true to the fact that I know what my product is worth.
Yes.
And if I give in, then I'm saying that my product was less than.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
So I get that. And this whole thing about liking yourself, like having others like you, I used to have, and I still kind of do, working on this black and white thinking of if this person that I maybe I made a mistake and they've been my friend and they all of a sudden don't like me for a certain circumstance, I'm like, they don't like me at all.
Yes.
This very black, it's either you like me mm-hmm. or you don't.
And it's tunnel vision.
Yeah.
Because you start looking at scenarios like separate from the full scope. Mm-hmm. So you've taken a big picture and you've created tunnel vision to say, in this moment, I'm unliked. And you use a big broad paintbrush and say, I'm not liked at all. I'm unworthy. I have no value.
And it's not true.
It's just not true. But you have to be self-aware enough to recognize when you're doing mm-hmm. that. And that requires, again, doing work on yeah. yourself. So that example of just learning to stick to your guns and what it is that you believe, knowing you're going to lose, you'll probably lose a customer. But then also, you know, in this day and age, having so much information to say, like, is this really a client that I need to fight for and keep, you yeah. know, like, is this a relationship that I really need to do all that I can to, not mend it, but protect it,
yeah.
you know, but there's only so much of you and you can't make everybody happy.
Mm-mm.
So it's also prioritizing, I think, and really, it does create a great sense of accountability.
Yeah.
So if I'm going to say I believe in these products enough that I can tell someone, I'm sorry you were disappointed,
yeah.
then I better be working so hard to create and offer products I can stand behind.
Yeah.
Because if they're crap, then I can't say that. You know what I'm saying? So it serves you on both sides. You're being true to yourself. You're drawing boundaries and knowing your self-worth and your business's worth.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're also creating accountability to say, I better make sure my business is everything that I believe it. I'm saying that it is.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Oh, 100%. You just hit the nail. It. Yeah. I feel like when you trust yourself, and you trust that what you're doing is the right thing for you and your business. And even looking back and realizing when you're not doing mm-hmm. the right thing for your business.
Mm-hmm.
But knowing those people around you who you can trust, who you know, I have a few people that I bounce off ideas from. My husband's one of them who I bounce ideas. And when they tell me, and it took me a long time to not feel like it was a personal personal criticism, but more of like constructive, and they're there because they want to make sure that I succeed. So when you were starting your business and you maybe received some criticism or maybe some feedback, was it hard for you feel like, I didn't do awesome right off the bat?
Yeah. Well, again, it's the same, yeah. like if you looked at it on a chart,
yeah.
it's like as Susie healed and, you know, created more self-worth, so did she do well better with accepting criticism and in her business. It's the same line on the graph, but I couldn't stand criticism. I couldn't stand any kind of correction because it felt like rejection. It was deeply personal. So again, how did I combat that? Well, I tried to be as perfect as I could. So then you can't criticize me
yeah.
because I'm freaking perfect.
Yeah.
And it's all of it is trying to avoid rejection. I mm-hmm. could see that was the goal from the end of my marriage and the first year or two of my business. The goal was be loved and accepted and avoid rejection at all cost.
Mm-hmm.
And now I am so glad and grateful to say that that's not where I'm at.
Yeah.
But initially it was this, a hot pursuit of perfection to avoid correction because it hurts so badly. I mean, even for someone to say like, hey, I saw your Instagram story and what are you talking about? You see, you know, like,
yeah.
That was weird. And I would be like, oh, and let me delete it real quick.
Oof. Yeah.
You know, or if I misspelled something on an Insta story, I mean, I deleted that immediately.
Oh my gosh, you're speaking my language, girl. Yes. Yeah. I mean, I don't know how many times. It's funny. It's I feel comedic now when I would spend 30 minutes for one Instagram story.
For a 15 second spot.
I'm like, I just wasted 30 minutes instead of just posting what I had to post. And I did have friends who are grammar Nazis, and I appreciate them. I love them to death. Thank you. But it was so hard to accept that and be like, you know what? Now I just don't care. Like, right. you can give your opinion about my grammar, and that's okay, but I'm not going to go back and correct it. Right. But thanks.
And that's just a teeny tiny example. Yeah. I mean, you put that on a larger scale of you share something that you really do believe and somebody criticizes it in a DM, like, well, what's your response? You know, is it to take it down? Is it, what's it going to be? And I think I've grown a lot in that I'm only going to put up what I won't take down, first of all. So if I put it up there, I have to leave it up there.
Yeah.
I'm not going to take it down. And then again, that then provides the accountability to say, well, then I better like it, you know, if I put it up there. And then not backing down and just accepting that criticism is just a part of everyday life. And like you said, criticism from those close to you is not meant to hurt, you know, it's meant to correct and to grow you.
Yeah.
And so it's, again, being able to say, this person wants what's best for me. And they're not coming at me. They're literally trying to help me. And that is freedom.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Oh, social media. There are so many things we could talk. I always feel like every single episode that I have, somebody brings up social media because it's so, this space really does create, and it's like, I don't want to call it a parasite. It's like, but it creates this like need for to be perfect and curated. And I think that there is a space. I always say for my feed guys, you know, I curate my feed. It's not always rainbows and you know, and sunshines though in real life stories. I feel like I can come and just be my ultimate self. Mm-hmm. But like, I do like pretty pictures and I do like it to be a certain way and that's okay. Mm-hmm. But I do not like it when I spend a lot of time into it. Because there's a lot more things that I want to do. But it took me a long time to realize, like, I'm not going to spend hours just to make sure that my grid looks perfect.
Mm-hmm.
But it's hard. And there's days where I'm like, oh, gosh, I spend an hour and I just tell myself, it's okay. This is learned behavior. You're going to relapse. You're going to relapse. It's okay. It's fine. You're just, the next time that you do this, you catch yourself because you've realized that this is behavior that you've done in the past. And that's fine. And I totally did not ask you this question. So I do want to go back to this question because I think it's important for people going back to the divorce. Have you talked to your children about it?
No.
Okay.
They know their parents are divorced. I've talked about that. Like, you know, your dad and I
not together.
Well, I've said, do you know what divorce is? And they're like, yeah, when I'm, you know, I'm a huge Brené Brown fan.
Oof.
Yes. And that quote you posted is one of my favorites on the feed. But she's big on telling your children and opening the narrative to say, this is what I think you meant when you said, this is the story I'm telling myself, this, you know, and so I try that with my children. Like, do you know what divorce is? Yes. Okay. Tell me what it is and I'll correct you if it's wrong or it's right. Okay. And why do you think we got divorced? What is the story you're telling yourself? You know, and have I really had that conversation? And my son just turned 7. So he and I will have that conversation very soon. Now, up to this point, I have said the divorce was between your dad and I, and it had nothing to do with you or how much we love you or anything you have done. And I love you very much, and your dad loves you very much. And they know that, but that's not enough. But I do think it's important that you wait for the appropriate ages to go deeper. And so he and I will have that conversation pretty soon about what is the story you're telling yourself about why your dad and I are divorced.
Yeah.
My daughter just turned 5. I'm not going to have that conversation with her yet. Now, she is showing some signs that I think she's personally wearing some of this. Mm-hmm. So maybe I will have it sooner with her.
Yeah.
But
but you make the call. Yes. You know, you set the boundary, mm-hmm. And you control that conversation, mm-hmm. you know, because it's your children, mm-hmm. you know, and I think it's important to have it or not have it if that's something that you don't want to do. And that's right. completely your choice. I think it's like when other people tell you, well, have you talked to your children? Well, have you said this? Mm-hmm. That's when I'm like, I don't want you to have a conversation to your children if you don't feel ready, because it's a lot of family and friends can pressure us to feel like we have to say certain things or have conversations earlier than we're ready to right. do it, you know.
But, you know, I think, and you probably know this mm-hmm. much more than I do, just as a professional in this area, our whole lives we're writing stories.
Mm-hmm.
We're creating the script.
Yeah.
And so even if they're not emotionally mature enough to have that conversation, they've already been writing a story yeah. as to why things are the way they are. And I mean, we see that now just as adults, like the way I react is because I wrote this narrative way back when about why things are the way they are. And so it's saying, you know, to your children, what did you make of this situation?
Mm-hmm.
And how can I be sure that you know what role you had and what role you didn't, and where your job ends and where it begins, and to try to help with that.
Yeah.
Because I think, man, if we can, even if he, you know, even if my kids were, I have no problem putting them in therapy as children. Yeah. I think that that's fantastic, because I think if they could have a leg up on
learning how to express themselves and yes. understanding what's going on. Yeah.
Look, they would be light years on the journey of self-worth and acceptance than we are,
yeah.
you know, because I'm like, I'm trying to untangle webs from 36 years ago. Yeah. I'm trying to, you know, go back and like relive repressed memories. And if they were taught at a young age how to process pain, how to work through these things, then they're going to be such healthy adults.
Yeah. And be semi-prepared for certain situations.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, like, I tell my younger clients, like, you can come to therapy and we can prepare for certain situations or scenarios that are, you know, you feel are going to happen or go a certain way. But really, you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
The future is still, we're still writing our future.
Mm-hmm.
It's still happening,
mm-hmm.
you know, so we have no control over that, but we can create, there are stuff that we do have control. So you have control in putting your kids into therapy and learning how to process those emotions and also opening the space to say therapy is okay to go,
mm-hmm.
and making sure that they're both physically and mentally healthy.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah, I know my parents in that generation that they were in were like, you only go to therapy if something's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of negative connotation mm-hmm. around it. And that won't be the dialogue that I give my children.
Yeah, yeah. So. And that they just have to be okay with that. And yeah, and that's something that I've had to talk to my family about, because in my culture, we do not air our dirty laundry.
Yes.
That's the saying. We don't air our dirty laundry. We
For
keep it
sure.
in the family. And it's one person's issue. It's not everybody's issue, which is not in working in family therapy. And I don't do it because there are some therapists who are blessed to be able to work with multiple people at the same time. I am not one of them, but there are so many dynamics, and every person has their own personality. And when we go into therapy with that, it is challenging, but I think it's important for families. I mean, I encourage families or, you know, mothers and daughters to go to therapy together, because that's very healing.
Oh, yeah.
I just had an episode with this therapist who she went with her mom for the first time to therapy, and that was hard. But yet she said that she had to kind of tell her, I'm going to buy you lunch after if you go, you know,
yes.
like
oh, my
sleep
gosh.
Her through that.
That would, yes.
But like for her, she was like, I don't want to go there. Like, I'm not crazy. That was
yeah.
the whole thing. I'm not crazy. It's like,
right.
you don't have to be crazy.
I had some family members that had vocalized they wish I wouldn't talk about the divorce anymore. Ooh. And they're kind of like, you know, we don't understand why it shouldn't be a part of your story. Like, move on kind of thing. Like,
yeah.
look at how great. And they meant it, I think, as a compliment. Like, you know, you've come so far. Like, maybe drop the stuff with the divorce. And that's where I say, but if it helps one person, like, it's my obligation to keep telling this story. Yeah. I don't keep going back. I'm not harping on what happened or bitter or, you know, trying to come on every podcast to slander him, but I want to help people who have gone through this. Yeah. And the way to do that is to talk about it. And so it's like, now when I taught divorce care, they encourage the leaders, you should only lead for 2 sessions and then you need to take a break, because it is hard to keep reliving the trauma.
Yeah.
But that's different than sharing your story and saying, and this is what I did and this is what I learned and this is how I came through it, mm-hmm. to try to help others get through it. Mm-hmm. But I think it goes, like you said, it's a generational thing, a cultural thing of, let's just stop talking about it. Let's not share that with everyone. You know, it's done. Come on, let's just pretend it never happened.
It's never done. It's a part of us. And that's okay to share that it's a part of us. Mm-hmm. It doesn't define us. That's a different thing.
Right.
It's not, it doesn't define who you are. It created skills and learning experiences for you to be able to share with other people, and so other people can learn from those experiences. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, if people are going through this, they're going to navigate it mm-hmm. in very different ways. And I love that during this episode that you talked about it in a way of like, I had to do work. I wasn't at the space or emotionally healthy at the time mm-hmm. to make decisions rationally, that I thought if I had self-worth, which that's honestly, that's incredible that you said, I didn't have self-worth. It's so hard to be honest mm-hmm. with ourselves. Because I mean, for me, for a long time, I didn't want to share my story and my relationship with my mom because I'm like, I don't want to make that other person feel bad. And mm-hmm. I'm like, but that's still my story. I don't want to silence my story.
Right.
Because somebody else is embarrassed for it. Like, I'm sorry, but
mm-hmm.
I'm not doing this to harm you.
Right.
You know, and your family, like, you're not doing this to, like you say, slander him. In no way did you, like in this episode, did we, you know, because it's not about him.
Right.
It's about you.
Right.
And how this story will help somebody else. So I love that. So we are getting towards the end of our episode. And so I wanted to ask you a question that I ask all of my podcast guests, which is, what is one thing that you wish people would talk about more that isn't talked about enough? And this could be anything.
Well, I'm big on vulnerability. I've already said I love Brené Brown. I also love Glennon Doyle. She's one of my favorites. And so that just this idea of being your authentic self.
Yeah.
And it's all about self-worth and self-healing and trying to get to this place of wholeness. And I think I wish people would just talk more about what's really going on inside of them. The ugly stuff. So I felt like there's not enough conversation around infidelity when you're married and you're feeling it.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of resources available after the fact. There's, you know, marriage 911 classes, and you run and you go see a therapist, or, you know, you're trying to pick up the pieces after something has happened. But I always felt like there wasn't enough room to talk about, hey, I'm married and she's great. I'm going to talk from the man's perspective, you know, but I am finding myself wanting to sleep with someone else. And that level of like that vulnerability, I don't think that there's a space for people to talk about that.
Oh, yeah, because it's for a lot of the men, it's shame.
It's 100%.
And I know Brené Brown talks about shame, and it's like, and it's shame. And so our men don't feel like they can talk about mm-hmm. it because it's like, oh, that's dirty. Oh, that's like not something that you do like, or that you think of.
Yes.
But
and I think
if they had the space and they could go through it and see what's going on so that they could be like, and having that tough conversation with their wife and saying like,
oh, absolutely.
I actually want to cheat on you.
Okay.
Now, crazy, you know,
and I 1000% could say that that conversation needs to happen.
Yeah.
But what that would require is an extremely healthy female to accept that conversation. And who really could say, if my husband came to me and said that, I wouldn't flip out, you know, but that, why can't we get to that level of vulnerability to say, I'm struggling with this. And obviously there's something off. Mm-hmm. And even if you don't want to have that conversation with someone else, to have the resources to seek a counselor,
yeah,
to seek someone that you could talk to about it, so that you aren't trying to escape your reality, to, you know, fix a hole in your heart by destroying your relationships because you don't have anyone that you can talk to about it. And you found solace in another man or another woman. And it's like, I think that there needs to be room for the brokenness. We're really good about talking about being broken in past tense.
Yeah.
And we're really good about future tense too, because yeah, we talk about working with our children. But nobody, I think, is really saying, today I'm struggling with this desire that I know is not a good thing. And I think specifically, I feel like we aren't talking about that enough for couples and infidelity.
I 100% agree with that, because it, like I said, there's a lot of shame and mm-hmm, guilt to having those thoughts. And it does take a healthy woman, a very self-aware person, to know that this took courage over mm-hmm comfort.
Yes, that's a Brené Brown, yeah, for sure. And to be able to not feel rejection from that, mm-hmm, because I think even having your spouse or partner admit that to you, it would be so easy to feel like, well, you've already done it. The fact that you feel that way, you've already cheated.
Yeah, and it's hard. I mean, I'm as you're saying it, I would think about it. If my husband were to tell me, like, Monica, for a while I've been having these thoughts, mm-hmm, and I would just be like, I would flip out. I mean, I think, yeah, it's like you're never ready for a conversation, no, like that. I would be dumbfounded of like, what do I do? What do I say?
Right.
Because it almost feels like it's already, like, the act was done when it hasn't even been done.
Right. But I think that hard. That is a projection, yeah, of our own fear. Mm-hmm. So the same resources that would be available to a person who's having these feelings about infidelity, those resources need to be there for the partner that's having to deal with the now knowing mm-hmm that this person is struggling. But yeah, what courage that would take, what pain could be avoided, because it really could. At the end of the day, if your spouse is coming to you telling you that, when you get past the idea of how painful that would be, his or her commitment, pursuit to not destroy your relationship, that's what's admirable.
Yeah.
Incredibly admirable. But I think we're so broken, and we're so sensitive, and if we're not working on it, we're so wounded.
And we'll personalize it. Like, did we do something for us, for him to think that? Oh, of course. That?
Yeah. You know? But at the end of the day, I think that person who's saying that is realizing something's off. Mm-hmm. Because I think most, if not all, and I'm no expert, but affairs are an effort to escape or to change a reality.
Yeah.
Same is true for any coping mechanism, alcohol, drugs, mm-hmm, whatever it is. Love it. You know, but just
it's
like
a way to cope. Yeah,
it is. And so let's help this person figure out what they're trying to cope with, mm-hmm, and how we can help them to avoid making a really horrific and hurtful mistake.
Yeah,
or
exploring
decision.
The relationship. Maybe the relationship mm-hmm is to where they're not serving each other in the way mm-hmm that the marriage needs to be served. And then separating before this person, yes, feels like, oh my gosh, they cheated on me. And then this person has to now work through that trauma.
Right.
And so it avoids a lot of pain. I feel like definitely having this conversation. So where can people find you? I know you're doing a lot of great things. I know you have a foundation, which I'm curious, 626.
So 626 is for Matthew 6:26. Okay. So it's a scripture about look at the birds of the air. They don't sow or reap, and yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not much more valuable than they? It's a verse about provision and self-worth.
Love it.
Ha. And talking about turning pain into purpose, and how I have taken both the opportunities with my business and the entrepreneurship and partnered it with my heart and the empathy that I have for others.
Yeah.
I was able to create this foundation. And so real quick, what we do is we help families that have been affected by some sort of tragedy. It mm-hmm doesn't have to be divorce. It could be widowhood, illness, death, anything that has rocked their world and created a prison instead of a refuge in the house. So your home should be your sanctuary, especially for your children. And when something horrific has happened, it usually becomes a, more of a place of mourning. Mm-hmm. And you got to go through it. Don't get me wrong. We're not trying to slap paint on a pig or lipstick on a pig. Like, we know that that grief has to be done. Mm-hmm. But we also believe that we can help create a space for you that could elicit hope and joy, mm-hmm. and that would give you optimism about your future and helping you move forward. So we're solely donor funded. It's 626foundation.org. You can donate, you can nominate yourself or someone you know, you can volunteer. It's all on the website, and the Instagram is at 626foundation. We just completed our first project for a single mom that came from the women's shelter out here, and you can watch that on our YouTube. And then I'm trying to finish a project in California for a young widow. So those are the, that's the plug for the foundation. And then I own a home decor store called shopfromsusie.com. And like I said, portions of some of those products go to the foundation, and we use local artists and female artisans around the country. We try to do everything sourced in the United States, if not Texas, for home decor products. So
do you have a storefront, or is it just,
it's just online?
Awesome. Awesome. Yep. Awesome. So that's a shop. Is it shopsusie.com?
Shopfromsusie.com. And that Instagram is at fromsusie. And really, that's where you'll find me. And on my blog, I talk about divorce. I talk about decorating. I talk about tips and tricks. We've had lots of media coverage here lately. So.
Oh, I'm so excited. Thank you so much for being here and being vulnerable and sharing your story. There are so many good tips, and just... I feel like so many people are going to really resonate with this story of just self-worth and finding yourself and healing and personal development and business. Like, it's all, we, our business and our personal life situations all blend, mm-hmm. and everything affects everything in our life. It's so complex. So thank you so much for being here.
Thanks, Monica.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Cafe with Monica. If you enjoyed the episode, I want you to take a screenshot right now and share it on Instagram stories by tagging Cafe with Monica. This helps me spread the word so more and more people can hashtag just talk about it. Also, make sure to visit cafewithmonica.com to access the show notes and resources from this episode. I can't wait for you to listen to the next episode, so see you guys next time.